Good afternoon. You're listening to Around the Block, a community news program from the Block by Block team at WPPMLP Philadelphia 106.5 FM. On this show, we explore issues in the Philadelphia region with voices from the community through original reports from our team of journalists and live interviews. I'm Sherry Pennington.
And I'm Winter Schneider. Coming up, we'll have a conversation with longtime advocate for public services, Ermi Mala, about how Philadelphians can better understand and be a part of the city's budget process.
But first, Philadelphia City Council could approve a package of bills that would place limits on ICE activity in the city as soon as April 23rd. Council members Kendra Brooks and Rue Landau introduced their ICE Out legislation earlier this year, and on Monday, all seven bills were voted out of committee after council members held an all-day hearing with testimony from city council, city officials, immigrant advocacy groups, and members of the public.
Around the Block reporter Shania Weitch attended the hearing and spoke with lawmakers and advocates for immigrant rights. Erica Guadalupe Nunez is executive director of Juntos, an immigrant rights group in Philadelphia. She explained to Shania what the bills would do.
Could you name what some of the legislative bills are?
So there's seven bills in total. In general, there's different sort of pockets of what they do. The first is that it's going to require that ICE agents wear identification and don't go around masked. The second one is making sure that there is a clear law blocking the sharing of city data with ICE officials. The third one is making sure that federal warrants are required to enter city buildings. And the fourth one blocks any possible agreements or contracts with ICE moving forward. So in total, it's seven bills. Those are sort of the four pockets.
During the hearing, Councilmember Rue Landau explained the legislation is designed to protect people living in Philadelphia from abuses of the federal government.
This legislation draws a clear line. Philadelphia will not be complicit in policies that undermine the safety and dignity of our neighbors. Philadelphia will not use our resources to destabilize communities. Philadelphia will not turn its back on the very people who make this city. This is not new territory for Philadelphia. We've been a welcoming city. We believe in protecting immigrant communities. Our values have long been rooted in inclusion, dignity, and respect. But being a welcoming city cannot just be branding. It cannot just be something we put on a website or say at a press conference. It has to mean something in people's real everyday lives. It has to show up. It has to show up in how every agency operates every single day.
And Councilmember Kendra Brooks says her office did a lot of research before drafting the legislation, speaking to experts across the country and members of the immigrant community here in Philadelphia.
This package of legislation is one of the most comprehensive efforts from a local government to step up and meet the moment. We pulled from cities across the country who have experienced the worst abuses of ICE and the Trump administration. We consulted with the district attorney and legal experts who have deep knowledge of the subject matter. We worked hand in hand with the immigrant advocacy organizations right here in Philly who see the fear and confusion every day amongst their membership that ICE is causing. Many of these organizations shared with us the hope that they have that our city would be doing more. I share that hope and let today be the first step. With the ICE Out package, we are showing them, watch what we do, not what we say.
City governments have limited control over federal policies. But Juntos Community Defense Coordinator Lenore Ramos Juarez told Shania that she hopes the new bills help hold ICE agents more accountable for their actions, while helping community members feel at least a little safer.
What I would consider most important is making sure that our folks are not getting kidnapped by random people, right? It especially makes our community members feel insecure when they see people getting stuffed into vans and they have no idea what is going on, right? They don't see a single badge. They don't see a single vest. They see people unmasked kidnapping people off the streets. We get these calls all the time. People who don't know if it's ICE or PPD, right? Because they just sometimes they have vests that say police on, right? What does that mean? Yeah, I think it's getting these bills passed so our community members feel at least a little bit more safe, so at least that there's more guidelines around what ICE can and cannot do.
Philadelphia has had policies in place for over a decade to limit cooperation between ICE and Philadelphia police. But up until now, they've come from executive orders issued by a mayor. And that means that they can be overturned at any time by a mayor. Among other things, the ICE Out legislation would write those policies into laws that cannot be overturned so easily. But council members had some pointed questions for officials in Mayor Sherrell Parker's administration and the Philadelphia Police Department about how they will enforce the new laws. This month, the police department sent a policy memo to all employees underlying existing policies that prevent cooperation with ICE. During the hearing, Councilmember Brooks asked Police Department Deputy Commissioner and Chief of Staff Francis Healy whether police would use city property like bicycle racks to set up barriers during ICE actions. Healy said that would go against police department protocol.
We don't get involved in any ICE actions. The only time basically we're going to get involved is if there's an ICE agent in a crisis. There's either calls for an assist officer or something along those lines, as we would for any other federal, state, or other local officer. We do not get involved in civil ICE enforcement.
So if you come on the scene and no one's being assaulted and it's just a typical ICE arrest, how do you respond from that? Or how do you determine what's happening from there? Especially if they're masked, unidentified, and without uniform.
Right. What we're trying to do is make sure we balance the public safety interests of it. The issue is, and that's the reason for the protocol, to make sure our responding officers don't engage, don't take sides. Our bottom line is public safety, and oftentimes you'll see our officers as the line between ICE and protesters. The issue is our job is not to take a side, okay? And the issue is the only time we would get involved if there's actually physical violence or someone's actually in imminent harm.
City Council could hold a final vote on the ICE Out legislation as soon as Thursday, April 23rd. And with all but two members of City Council signing on as co-sponsors, the bills will almost certainly become law. Pennsylvania Immigration Coalition Executive Director Jasmine Rivera says once that happens, she'll be watching to see how quickly the city follows through on its promises to provide training and enforcement.
Really what we're looking for post-passage is that every single one of our city employees, our city workers, the amazing people who make this city run every single day, that they are trained, right? That they have very clear guidance and protocols to follow. If, God forbid, there is an interaction with immigration agents. We know for a fact the Department of Homeland Security is going to be sending extra immigration agents to Philadelphia and to all cities hosting World Cup. We know that's going to happen. That's June. We're in April. So we need our city, our administration, to take this seriously and to properly train all city employees on the nuances of this law.
Thank you to Shania White and Brad Linder for producing this story on City Council's hearing for the ICE Out legislation.
It's budget season in Philly, and right now City Council is in the process of considering the budget proposal put forth last month by Mayor Sherrell Parker. Council members are holding hearings, considering amendments, and ultimately trying to come together to pass a plan for the next fiscal year. Even though the process itself can feel abstract, the city's capital and operating budgets impact everyone living in the city. They determine how much money gets spent on large infrastructure projects for years to come, and how much money different departments will have to operate their programs from year to year. Today, we're speaking with Ermi Mala to find out more about what the budget is and how people can get involved in the process. Ermi is a resident of South Philly with over 25 years of experience in public and community health. She's a passionate advocate for public spaces in her community and across the city. She has been a part of the Philly Revenue Project, the People's Budget Office, Alliance for a Just Philadelphia, and the Tax Advisory Committee to City Council. Ermi Mala, thank you so much for joining us on Around the Block.
Thanks, Winter. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. Can you begin by telling us a little bit more about yourself and how you got involved in advocating for public spaces in Philly?
Yeah, so I moved to Philly over 30 years ago and didn't think I would still be here. But Philadelphia is an amazing place to be. And from the beginning of my tenure here, I realized I wanted to be a part of making it the Philadelphia that I want for everybody. And over this time, from the 90s till now, I've been involved in healthcare predominantly, but realizing that health is very broadly defined and really incorporates everything that impacts all of our communities, from our housing to violence on our streets, to our sanitation, to having safe places for us to go and to thrive in, that all of that is part of health. So I've really defined health very globally and feel like it's all of our responsibility to be a part of making that good for everyone in our city.
Thank you so much for already broadening that frame for us. Can you give us a brief overview of how the city budget process works?
Yeah. So the city budget is a document that's by law, has to be passed every year. The fiscal year for our city is from July 1st to June 30th. So before the end of the year, we have to pass a budget for the next year. And that is in our charter. So by law, we're supposed to do that. Generally, how we have done it is that city council is ultimately the ones who pass a budget, but our mayor has traditionally put forth what they think the budget should be. So when we talk about budget season, we start generally when the mayor drops that budget. This year and most years, it comes out in March. So from March and June, city council really goes back and forth, listening to the community to see what do they feel about what was proposed, how can we change those numbers, who are they impact, you know, who they feel like needs more impact with the money. And then by the end of June, they have to pass that budget. I will say that over the time that I've been working on budget advocacy, that the budget season really is all year. Because what happens is that departments get asked at the end of the fiscal year or at the end of the calendar year what those numbers look like. So if those numbers are going in before the end of the calendar year and the mayor is using that, by the time the mayor puts out that budget proposal in March, we're a little too late. So what I try to get people to do and what we have seen with advocacy is to look at the whole budget season as the whole year, that it is all of our responsibility, even after that budget is passed, to be part of the process to make sure that our needs and what needs to be addressed in the budget gets put into priorities from the beginning.
Thank you. We know the city has both a capital budget and an operating budget. What's the difference between the two?
We have two different budgets. So the city budget is about $14 billion. The operating budget is the money that is used to do things with, right? So it's what runs our departments. It is the supplies and everything that goes into operating the city. The capital budget is a separate budget. This year, they proposed $8 billion in our capital budget. Capital projects are things that are over $15,000 and that go over a 5 to 6 year period. So that money isn't spent within that year. It goes over several years and takes care of things that are buildings or things that are that you can touch that will have longevity over the 5 years. So there's two different, the operating and the capital, and then operating gets broken down even more into a general fund, which is what we really like to look at and focus on because that it's almost $7 billion this year that is proposed in the mayor's budget. And the general fund is what city council really has control over to propose. The other part of that are what we call fixed costs that are in the budget and we can't really have an impact on. They are already just set, and those are things that the city has to pay.
Thank you. I'd like to ask you about the capital budget specifically. Can you break down right now where you think those numbers are in terms of department the priorities on a general level? What are some of the major priorities and allocations?
I mean, I will. So the capital budget's a little bit harder to track. When we talk about city departments and those priorities, it's generally in the general fund, just because that's what we're looking at every year with those departments. The capital budget, you know, for libraries, They put in about $33 million. So remember, it's a $8 billion budget.
Okay.
So $33 million for libraries this year, which seems like, I mean, do you think that that sounds like a lot of money?
To me, yes.
Yeah. If I had $33 million, that would be amazing. Yes. I could redo my kitchen and my bathroom that needs to be redone. That would be great.
Absolutely.
But $33 million over 54 branches. So we have 54 libraries throughout the whole city. So it's not even, not a lot. And it's over 5 to 6 years. So you're really looking at only about $5 million that they're going to spend each year on fixing up buildings like libraries that really are safe havens for people in our communities and for everyone to use. And, you know, if you think about libraries, they're the last indoor public space that people can be without having to purchase something. And warming centers and cooling centers. And what, you know, when we talk about a budget, I talk about it as a moral document, that it really is showing what our priorities are in our city.
Okay.
So if you think about 54 branches across the whole city, $33 million over 5 to 6 years, that warming centers to protect our most vulnerable when the temperatures were under 20 degrees for weeks, or when they're going to be over 90 degrees in the summer, that they will be cooling centers, that we don't have working HVACs in all of those libraries, that what do you think $5 million is going to do to protect us?
So where does the library fit on the totem pole? You're calling them out specifically.
I am.
what's the priority?
It's pretty low on the totem pole.
I mean, in terms of the budget, the allocation, who is getting the majority? I'm just curious.
Yeah. So if you look at all of the different departments, it's interesting to look at the proposal. And if you look at percentages, you'll see that a small percentage would be something like the Office of Sustainability, right? So they are right now in the proposed budget, it's about $3 million.
Okay.
So $3 million over $8 billion, you know, or $7 billion, that's there. And if you move up, so I also like to talk about, so libraries right now put in for $76 million in their working budget for 54 branches. Mm-hmm. And then we've got Parks and Rec, another public space that I like to advocate for, $89 million. You know, we've got over hundreds of parks for able to create greenery in our, but then you keep going up, you've got the police department, that's about $934 million.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the priority. Safety first, I guess.
Well, it's interesting to talk about safety because right now you're looking at an all-time low for homicides and crime.
True.
And you've got vacancies in our police department and across the board for city, you know, city workers. So it's kind of interesting to be like, oh, we're not even completely at capacity, but crime is down. Why do we need more money to create that safety? And if we really look at safety, don't we want to be protecting our health centers to be able to provide health centers, you know, health care for everyone who was in Philadelphia at a time when we know federally Medicaid is going to get cut. And those cuts are happening, and we're not going to see those impacts probably until next calendar year. But right now, a majority of the part of the health department that deals with mental health. So in Philadelphia, Medicaid is very interesting how it gets brought out to people who are low income and need that service, that a majority of the behavioral health dollars, which comes through Medicaid, is through Medicaid and not from the city. So if you are not putting in city dollars to protect our services now and protect our workers to make sure we have people working to be able to deliver those services, when they cut federal dollars, we're really not going to have anything.
Well, thank you.
You mentioned that the budget is a moral document, so this is a continuation on this theme. I want to ask how you came to understand the budget more deeply in terms of what it represents through your advocacy for increasing funding to public services and public spaces in particular.
Yeah, so, you know, we see city council and you'll see protests and you'll see rallies. And, you know, it's good for people to come out because part of it is, especially after the pandemic, we don't do a lot of things in person and feel connected to each other in that very physical way. So At first, it was like, oh, we should just go to city council and talk about what we want. And what we realized is that that's great and that's important. And we encourage, and I do a lot of advocacy of just teaching everyday people on how they can be a part of this process because it's important. No one knows your life except for yourself, right? So it's important to tell the people who are responsible for taking care of you what is important or what is lacking in your life. So in a very small level, which is not even that small, how are we communicating that information to the people who represent us? So that's the first thing. I got involved with doing things in my local library. I was actually out on disability for a while with my own health issues and wanting to start giving back and said, well, why don't I go volunteer at the library? Became a reading captain, would read by fourth, and got involved with the community with giving out books and educating parents and families about how they can get more resources for their children. Mm-hmm. And what I realized was that those children need places to go, and those families need places to go. And libraries are very obvious places to be able to gather indoors and be able to have access to resources to help with your mental health, to I did a lot of work with families who English wasn't their first language. So how do we introduce them in a very welcoming way to a public resource, the free library, right? So a public resource that we should have in all of our communities. So every neighborhood deserves a fully functioning, fully staffed, open library. That when I realized that that was great and I was doing those, and then one day I would go and the library would be closed. And what was interesting is that I was like, well, why is it closed? Like, this is, you know, we all talk about when I was young, I would go there after school and I could find books and I could find other, you know, learn other things. And we were finding that they were closed. And I was like, well, why is that? So that really helped dive into the questions of, well, why do libraries close to the public? And one of it is that staff, they're not fully staffed. You know, there are union rules, which is good to protect people who work in the city. So the library is staffed by city workers. And city workers have to live in Philadelphia. So by protecting funding for city workers, we are also protecting people who live in Philly. They are our neighbors. And when I said, well, what does that mean? So if libraries don't have four staff, a librarian, a guard, and two other workers, they have to close to the public for safety reasons. So it was really interesting that you know, just with that lack of staff, we have to close the doors. Then we found, especially the past few months, that a lot of libraries were closed for building reasons. So the city is not very good of actually upholding our public spaces and taking care of our buildings. They will say that they are 100-year-old buildings, but we are looking at closing schools right now. We are looking at libraries getting closed because of the HVAC. And what happens is that they do something called deferred maintenance, which is that they don't take care of things before they start breaking. Right. They wait for them to break. And then by that time, it's too expensive.
Let me ask you, what are the best ways for people to get involved and stay connected with what's going on? You happen to be in the library, mm-hmm. so you understand the dynamics of what's going on. But the ordinary citizen, how do we stay connected to what the city's going to do and budget-wise?
I mean, what's really interesting is that I am a volunteer at the library. I'm not even in the library. Mm-hmm. So really looking at how do we take care of each other?
Yes.
And by taking care of each other, what are the things we need to really advocate for so that everyone gets taken care of is really where I come from. People ask me this all the time. And what I say is, well, what's important to you? Like, what is interesting to you? And if you don't have interest, then I will say, well, do you ever go to a park? Have you gone to the Southeast Asian Market at FDR? Yeah. Have you gone and walked on Schuylkill Banks? Like, do you like that? Well, if you like that, then you might want to get involved with the friends of a park group. Mm-hmm. Because really, the city, another thing that the city does, especially with parks, is that they don't have enough staff and they don't have enough workers to take care of the 2,000 trees that they have deemed eminently dangerous to community members that might fall over and hurt you right now, which is wild that we aren't just, you know, being able to take care of that. But if the parks department relies on what I call neighbor labor, which are very interested neighbors who go and clean up the park. We don't have enough staff because they don't hire full-time city workers to actually work full-time to clean up our parks. You might get what they call an SMA, so a seasonal maintenance assistant, for 6 months, no benefits. You know, my park doesn't have a bathroom. It doesn't have a shelter. But we expect someone to work there on minimum wage to clean up my park. So it relies heavily on neighbor labor for all of us who are invested in creating and protecting those spaces to come together. So one thing is just to volunteer and just figure out, you know, what is your commitment?
What's it like?
And it might just be that you're willing, you know, I'm at Mifflin Square Park every Sunday this morning at 9 o'clock. We come out and we just pick up trash and just try to pick up stuff. You know, it's a good way to get outside, be able to connect with neighbors and see what else is going on and transfer that information. So on a very quick level, it's just find out what's interesting to you.
Yes.
And just figure out how can you start to get involved. And then that trickles into further the budget, you know, to get more into the budget, because you'll see, well, what is it that impacts that thing that you are very interested in?
What can the average person do to really get involved or talk to their council people where it really counts? I know you said define what it is that you like to do and follow those things, but how do we get exposed to this stuff in general?
Yeah. So the first is I have everyone look up atlas.phila.gov and look up your address to see who represents you.
Okay.
So what we find is not everyone knows who their city council person is and what district they are in. So my number one thing is find that out. It also goes through more state and federal, but, you know, very specifically, who is your city council person, as well as who are these seven at-large members who also represent you. And my first thing is send them an email. Okay. Send them an email and introduce yourself just as a person who lives in their district.
And what is that site again you said to go
to? It's
atlas.phila.gov.
The next thing I would say is there's something called the People's Budget Office. It's a mural arts project that looks at really helping people understand the budget process. And they're doing budget 101s right now. Oh. So they could go to the website, find out where there's a budget 101, and go to it. It's a pretty interactive. I was a facilitator last summer to be able to just bring people into understanding all the aspects of it. You can also go to the People's Budget Office website, and that they have a presentation on there to get information. The Alliance for Just Philadelphia also are having different campaigns and is another way to find out how people are being plugged in. Those are just some real initial places to just
get involved. Thank you. That's great information.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We often hear that Philly is one of the poorest, largest cities in the U.S., and for decades, the city has cut back on funding to essential services with the story that there's just not enough money.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
No.
Can you say more about that? Because really, beyond the budget,
yeah.
Can you tell us what it would take for the city to actually meet the needs of all of its residents?
Yeah. I mean, one of the issues is that we rely on wages as our biggest form of revenue and taxes in the city. And we are now catching up with property taxes. So a lot of other cities rely on property taxes. So the, you know, what is the worth of where people are living? Philly, since 2008 till now, has been really in a whole season of disinvestment. So we had the crisis fall in 2008, so the bubble burst. At that time, they were like, oh my goodness, we have to hoard all the money that we have, and we want businesses to come in, and that money will trickle down to the regular people, because these business people care about people. And what we realize is that a lot of times, businesses just care about their business and the money that they are making and their profits. You know, they are for profit for a reason. And that money doesn't necessarily trickle down. So we talk about something called austerity. So when we're just like, well, we need to keep this money and not use it because we might need it for a rainy day. And really what we're seeing now is if you actually invest in what we need, people can actually start to thrive and go back and put money back into the system. During COVID, what did it look like when people got stimulus checks? Right? We just gave money to everybody, and people spent that money, and people felt better, and they weren't as stressed about having to meet their mortgage or their rent, and they where you're going to get food, you know. So we could just give people money, and then that could thrive back into the budget. But right now, it's we're not taxing and generate revenue in a very progressive way. So there are, you know, taxes. So we have something called a tax abatement. So if you build new houses, then you don't have to pay your whole taxes. Yeah. You know, maybe we should start to generate some money there. Maybe we could get places like Comcast, who don't pay taxes, yes, to actually put in the billions of dollars. You know, right now, the mayor is asking for a $1 increase in Uber and Lyft. And there are people who are like, oh, you know, Uber and Lyft, those are people who are rich taking Uber and Lyft. And what you're finding is someone, you know, working class, who SEPTA is not going to SEPTA is not going to meet their needs because of the not enough workers, their buses are being canceled, that at the last minute, that person's going to have to take rideshare to get to their working class job. So who is it going to hurt? It's going to hurt people who are already not already making a lot of money. So we really just need to tax the rich.
We also wanted to ask you if there are any initiatives or people who are really giving you hope right now when it comes to connecting the dots between people's needs and the city meeting those needs.
Mm-hmm. Those are, I feel like, two separate questions, okay, but also together. And just to put it together, right now, with all of the ICE out sort of legislation, but really looking at mutual aid on the ground that has been going on for centuries, but really was exemplified during the pandemic of how do we provide, how do we take care of our neighbors and how do we do that? I think that really gives me hope, is just how are we finding out what people need and just realizing I have it and I'm just going to give it to you without any other exchange, I think is amazing. And we have people and they really need to help protect our neighbors like they did in Minneapolis, to sign up for on the ground sort of patrols so that we can protect our neighbors. And that just really connects to ICE Out legislation.
And lastly, are there any messages that you would like to share with community that you just you feel it's important for people to know?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone needs to know that they matter and that their voice is actually something that is important and that people don't know, right? So it's important to actually get your individual voice, whether you like something or not, and that city council who represents us, they're not really, they're just regular people. Like, just send them an email about what's going on so that they can find out about yourself. And then you can start to speak up for your neighbors if they're afraid to do it. And then if you get involved with a Friends Of group, then we can speak up as friends across the city and really looking at equity and distribution of resources across the city, because we all deserve to live in a thriving, safe city for each other.
Thank you so much for speaking with us, Ermi, and for taking the time today.
Brad Linder is Radio News Managing Editor for WPPM. Peter Liu is Radio Operations Manager. And Allison Durham is WPPM's Radio Program Manager. I'm Sherry Pennington.
And I'm Winter Schneider. And thanks to Campbell Simmons, who is our board operator for this episode.
Around the Block will be back next month with another episode featuring more stories and conversations from our team of Philadelphia area community journalists. And you can find more episodes of Block by Block on Philly Cam's SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, and wherever else you find your podcasts.
Thanks for listening.